inside my head. Before I reach 30, I'd be dead.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FN Talk 106.5.
On and on I go.
Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning. Time permitting, text line 251-343-0106. Pat says, wait a second, y'all report your gambling winnings. Smiley emoji. Anyway, keep up coming and we'll get to those when, if possible. Joining us now, Elias, a candidate for United States Senate. We got to know him really well over this campaign cycle. We're grateful for his presence on our show this morning, but Jared Hudson is with us. Jared, good morning. How are you doing?
Doing good, brother. How you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for making time for us. So, you still seem like you're in a pretty good shape here heading into Tuesday. How's the campaign going?
Man, it's going great, brother. I just got stuck in office because, you know, you got the little green button on the side. I'm sitting here pulling the door, and the lady's yelling at me, hit the green button. So sorry about that. Man, the campaign's going great, brother. We're full tilt, blowing and going. Last few days, you know, May 19th, get out and send a word to Washington. Vote Jared Hudson for Senate. I'm going around telling everybody that.
Well, I've been talking about this a lot lately. There's still a lot of undecided voters up for grabs. And I don't know, maybe that's what you're seeing too, but the polling seems to suggest that. What do you need to do to get those guys to come your way?
Well, for us, is continue to talk to people and increase name ID. The voters have all seen the, you know, millions of dollars have been spent on one candidate. Most of them know about some of the others, but for us, it's just continue to go out there and meet voters. And we've got a high turnover rate, so that's what we got to do, continue to share our message.
Well, let's talk about some of the news of the day. We'll start here. The big news in Alabama, obviously, is the redistricting episode. I know you're running for Senate, so it maybe doesn't directly impact you, but what are your thoughts on the way the fallout from the Louisiana decision and the way the state of Alabama went about handling it?
Well, so I'll say on the front end, you know, the turnout is always the big issue, right? Even without all this going on, a turnout in a off-year GOP primary, right? So it's not, it's a primary where it's normally lower turnout. So that's always the biggest thing, making sure our voters still turn out. Now, hopefully, this decision doesn't wind up getting less voters to turn out, because I believe is it August 11th when the special election will be for districts, was it 6, 7, 1, and 2? So hopefully it doesn't mess with turnout on our end. But on the other side of it, I think the biggest question I have, and I understand from everything I've heard, because I haven't been involved in it necessarily, they decided to go with a bird in the hand as opposed to two in the bush. You know, instead of pushing for the 7-0 districts, they pushed for 6-1. You know, I would just say I kind of wish they would have pushed for 7-0 with what we've seen going on for at least my whole life with the way the Democrats redistrict things in states, you know, that are all blue. But, you know, at least we're going to be able to hopefully take a district back and make it more palatable for that area as opposed to having a CD1 that's Wiregrass all the way to Mobile. So I do think that that's positive. I just wish that they would have pushed a little bit harder on the 7-0.
Well, we had Coach on this morning. It sounds like we're going to get there ultimately if he's in charge. Let's start here. Trump and China, you're sort of having expertise on some of this foreign policy. You're watching this. What do you make of it?
Well, yeah. So, I mean, you know, Trump goes over to China. I don't think we're going to see any, you know, major tariff relief or anything like that. I hope I'm wrong. I could be wrong. Maybe they make a deal. I think it's more of a flex, a little more of a strength thing. You know, I think that they've got to be careful. China has been at the, you know, 50-year game for a while. So they are really good at the long game. And we don't play on those sort of cycles. We run on an executive cycle. You know, every 4 years we get a new president. So that's something that we're going to have to be careful about because, again, they're willing to play the long game to ultimately try to become the world superpower, because that's what we're fighting for. We're in an economic war with them right now. What's going on with the Straits and the IRGC and Iran? The benefit we have is it's hurting China, their data centers, all the AI stuff, a lot of the oil that they would use to run those facilities. And then also, if you look at the land bridge that Iran is for China, they've had a lot of investment pull out of there, the Belt Road Initiative going through Iran that China was supporting. So there's a lot of things happen economic happening economically that's impacting China. Maybe we can use those. Maybe the president can use those as leverage tools to ease the burden on the American people, ultimately by, you know, hopefully in some positive way, partnering or making deals to where we have the partner would be, I guess, the wrong word, but we have the upper hand and continue to show our strength on the world stage, especially with one of our major enemies like China. If anybody can do it, I think President Trump can do it. I mean, he's the, if there's a guy who can make a deal, what's that guy? So maybe he goes over there and makes us a good deal that helps the American people.
And then, I, you know, the hope here is that maybe the Chinese have some leverage with the Iranians. We don't know.
That's the hope, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, and that's why I mentioned all of that with what they had going on in Iran. That is kind of the thought and the hope. I don't ease up. I don't think that it's going to be anything crazy other than maybe we can make a good deal that lets up on some of these issues we see going on with Iran. Because, again, I mean, we're looking at, and President Trump mentioned it, and I think it'd be great. Let's pause the gas tax, right? So the federal gas tax, so that we can, I guess, kind of afford. It wouldn't be that much. Was it 18 and a half cents? But start being able to afford things a little bit more as we're starting to take the brunt of what this issue, this conflict in Iran is.
And, you know, let's, while we're on this topic, sort of an update on Iran. And the way that's going, you know, some days it sounds like from the administration we are going to achieve. And other days it sounds like we're going to escalate what's going on. What do you make of it?
Brother, I can't make anything of it, because every time I think something's going to happen, like, hey, wow, we might have a peace deal, then all of a sudden it's like it kind of unravels or the wheels fall off the bus. And at one point in time, it was our, you know, our partners in Israel were smoking every dude that we $82 million a day. And then I heard somebody say $482 million a day. Whatever it is, it's costing them millions upon millions of dollars a day with what we have going on in the Strait. So hopefully we can hang on in this waiting game long enough to starve them out to where they have to come to the table and make a deal. I mean, I even heard water in their country is, you know, they're getting depleted on water, which is a problem, and they're going to have to come to the table soon. Hopefully we can wait long enough.
Well, culturally, I mean, there's an aspect of this that seems to be propping this up, that the economic pressure isn't really, I mean, I'm sure it's having some impact, but they're just hanging on. I mean, is it that? Do they feel that wedded to whatever Persian nationalism, or maybe it's Islam? I mean, what is keeping that from crumbling under its own weight?
Well, so, I mean, think of it this way. I guess the best example I can give is, you know, we all remember 9/11 when the towers went down, and it really didn't matter where you were in America. It didn't matter, you know, who you were for or against. I mean, look at how our nation coalesced to go after, you know, the perceived enemies of the nation, whoever they were at the time and whoever they became, right? We were all kind of, everybody was American. Everybody was proud to be American. If you look, it's the same things happening in Iran, right? This is not Venezuela. The same things happening in Iran with the IRGC. You have the Persian people who feel as if they're under attack. And when you have a propaganda machine that is running a message that says, hey, this is the Americans, this is what they're doing to us, that definitely emboldens people to hold on to, in this case, their Persian heritage. With that also being said, Islam, definitely the Persians, they've been around for forever, right? Go all the way back in the Old Testament, the Bible. I mean, Daniel was in the Persian kingdom. So they've been around for thousands of years. They're good at, we're talking about China at the 50 and the 100-year game. This is a group of people who they're good at the 1,000-year game. So it's a little bit different than, you know, our American microwave mentality. And that's why I say, are we going to be able to play the waiting game in a way that brings us to an end? Because we can't let them win. We can't let China win. And we definitely don't want to put boots on the ground. Because it's not, unless they're willing to blast everybody back to the Stone Ages, like we've heard them say, then we don't need to put boots on the ground.
Well, tell me, you know, how do you find the right balance here? While we're playing a long game, or they seem to be playing a long game, and we have to play, you know, some degree by their terms, How do we not do this mission creep, nation building, you know, more of the neocon strategy? I think it's kind of rejected by a lot of your average Trump Republican voter.
Well, it's definitely rejected. I mean, it's rejected by warfighters like me who fought in every year of the dang GWAT since I joined the military. I mean, every time we went overseas, had buddies from the SEAL teams die. They didn't come home to their babies, didn't come home to their wife. And every time we deployed, we had to kill people. That then all of a sudden the Biden administration pulls out and says, oh, we're going to still send $40 million a week to them. I say all that to say, yeah, the neocon strategy of never ending war to keep us paid is bad. That's why I say if the politicians are willing to blast them off the face of the map and say we're killing every living thing there, that's the only time where it says, okay, maybe they would support boots on the ground. But if they're not willing to do that at the front end, they're not willing to support our warfighters who are going to go on the ground and risk their lives, and the families of our warfighters who are risking their men and women who would go in and do that. So I almost think that's a moot point because we don't have the stomach, the financial ability, or the willingness to do that. So we have to look at what's going on now. We're continuing to strain Iran, continuing to block the straits and try to get this thing in a way where we can make a deal, move away, impact China economically, and not risk the lives of our young men and women. Doesn't matter if you're for or against war, be for the war fighter. I mean, you've heard me say that before.
Well, I've asked you this before, but what's a success look like? Because, you know, you listen to the Lindsey Grahams, it's just a wholesale new government that I don't know that is plausible. But, you know, is it just getting the Strait of Hormuz open? Have we taken away the threat sufficiently? What do you think that in the end should look like?
Man, that's the million-dollar question, and I think you've got a bunch of people arguing about it. I'll tell you this. Success looks like not listening to people like Lindsey Graham. I'll give you that much. But you know, I don't know necessarily what success would be. I mean, the administration has outlined what they think success is, and I think the ultimate piece is keeping the Iranians or the IRGC from having a nuclear weapon or having nuclear capabilities, and I think that's what they're seeking to do.
But we feel like we've done extensive damage to the progress they've made over the decades. Is it, I mean, do we ever end it? Or do we only end it once you get a new regime in place? Because they're always going to be aspiring toward this objective, getting a nuclear weapon, a weapon of mass destruction, whatever you want to call it, and being able to have it in their arsenal. You know, or do we just do what we can and then come back, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 years and do this all over again?
No, we can't look, we can't do that because that's what happened in 1979, 1983, all through the 80s. And then you look in the late 90s, early 2000s, we lost 17 sailors at the USS Cole, you know, bombing. So, and then again, recently in 2023, buddies of mine, Chris Chambers, Nate Ingram, that gave their lives for this nation, taking down a Houthi ship. So, we wouldn't have even had GWAT if this had been dealt with when it first, you know, rose its ugly head. It has to be dealt with. Otherwise, our kids are going to be dealing with an Iran that has a nuclear weapon that's able to touch anywhere in Europe and honestly possibly even be able to touch the rest of the world. So it has to be dealt with now. And I think the 60% enriched uranium is a problem. People will say it's not. No, that's a big problem. But how do you deal with that now? I think that's why Trump's going to China. And we'll know when we hear, hopefully we hear that some good progress has been made. Because, again, China's using Iran to wage an economic war, to wage a proxy war on the United States of America. So I don't want to get the cart in front of the horse. Let's wait and see what comes back when President Trump lets us know what's happened in China and what kind of deals are made.
And I know we've made this entire segment about Iran, but I just got one more question. I guess of anything, have we taken sort of the domination or the influence, let's say, that Iran has over the entire region? Because that to me, you know, they were meddling in other Gulf state politics. They have an influence there. If anything, maybe we have limited that to some degree.
You know what? I think we have. I think also one of the things, too, we showed a lot of our partners' true colors, whether it be NATO, whether it be the Arab states. Like, I mean, if you look at the Saudis, they buckled up shop and said, hey, we're not doing any production, you know, talking about all their, you know, oil facilities. We're not doing any production until 5 months after this thing is over. Everybody started showing their true colors, which is something that's very interesting for us to see and know, because we've been investing a lot in a lot of these places over the last few years. And then it also was able to give the administration time to go and say, hey, Israel, settle down for 1 minute. Stop killing everybody we're talking to. So I think all of our geopolitical partners in the region, we've been able to really probably bolster and make it even better, and maybe hurt, like you said, hurt some of the Persian partnerships with some of the Arab partners we have in the Gulf states.
Jared, we got to get out of here. Folks want to know more about your campaign, find you online or get in touch. How can they do so?
HudsonForAlabama.com. Like, share, and follow. Check us out. Follow us on social media. And let's get ready to send a warrior to Washington. Vote Jared Hudson on May 19th.
Well, Jared, best of luck to you on Tuesday, and maybe we'll hear from you again very soon.
Thanks, Jeff.
All right, Jared Hudson, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porras Show on FM Talk 106.5. He said something.